This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, you know you're listening to Talk Rope Nation. You might know I'm Jim Ross, the voice of AEW, and we're glad you're with us. We're going to have one hell of a podcast.
Well, 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 the band is back together for the first time in I don't know how many weeks, fellas. The trio has been completed once again. It's Top Rope Nation, Ryan Drosty of comicbook.com, and I am here with both of them tonight, Kyle Ross and Justin Joint, as we get set to do a little historical deep dive tonight. We're talking about WCW Clash of the Champions to get us ready for WWE Clash of Champions this Sunday on the WWE Network. And so let me first welcome to the show Justin Joint. Exactly 2 weeks ago was the last time you were on the broadcast. Welcome back to your show, Justin, Top Rope Nation. What's going on?
Not much, man. Good to be back, and really good to be talking to both of you. It feels like it's been forever. But yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I could be worse. I could be a member of Retribution.
You could have a name like J-Bar, right?
Yeah, J-Bar.
Yeah. I don't even know when the last time it was that you and Kyle were on the same show, because we've kind of been doing these split things where I'm with you one episode and Kyle the other episode. It has been quite a long time. So good to have you guys both on the line. Kyle, what's going on out there in Ohio tonight?
What up, T-Bar? What up, Mace?
What great creative, man. I mean, those are some really complex, thoughtful names.
The only slapjack I recognize in professional wrestling belongs to Stevie Ray, for the record.
There we go. Stevie Ray competed on a Clash of the Champions, more than one.
Should have been named Slap Nuts.
Yes. Guys, if this is the first time you are listening to Top Rope Nation, I don't know what's taken you so long to tune into this broadcast, but you're gonna not want to miss another show. Make sure you hit subscribe wherever you're getting your podcast, whether it is Apple, Spotify, TuneIn, Podbean, or even over at topropenation.com. Better yet, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. A written review goes a step further. If you leave us a written review, leave your Twitter or Instagram username in the review so I can get a hold of you and send you a free Top Rope Nation sticker in the mail. That's all you got to do for a free gift. A written review with 5 stars. I'll send you the free Top Rope Nation sticker. And also, we will read it on the air. And of course, we are brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcasting Network. Check out bluewirepods.com for all your podcasting needs. And while you're at it, check out some of the other wrestling podcasts on Blue Wire. Check out the Two Jabronis with a wrestling podcast show with BJ and Jeremy. Those guys always do a great job. And also check out Fight Game Media. Gigi over there, Double G, has a great interview. Just went up today with the AEW champion, Mr. Jon Moxley, talking UFC. Moxley is a huge UFC fan, so highly recommend you guys check out that show, Fight Game Media, their latest episode with Jon Moxley. And later in this broadcast, we'll be hearing from our sponsors over at Bet Online and Indeed. But like I said, guys, we're talking Clash of Champions. If you've been tuning in to Top Rope Nation for a long time, you know we like to go retro on you. We like to talk old school wrestling. So we thought this was a great opportunity with Clash of Champions this Sunday to kind of go back and look at all of those shows. Well, not all of them, but some of the highlights of the 35 editions of Clash of Champions, Clash of the Champions, I should say. Which aired between 1987 and 1997. Some of the most iconic moments in the history of WCW, and I guess I should say NWA, Jim Crockett Promotions, when they first started airing. Kyle, I mean, just overall, your reflections as a kid growing up, a wrestling fan, Clash of Champions, what did those shows mean to you?
First things first, getting back to the three of us doing the show together, Ryan, I think you would agree it's always wonderful to share a joint, isn't it?
Hell yeah, it is, man.
Okay.
I've been sitting on that for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I haven't. That's actually what I was looking up, the joint. I was like, I knew I had a good joke written. Let me look it up. No. So, Clash of the Champions is really interesting because, you know, in its heyday, it was at a time where there weren't a lot of pay-per-views, and the idea of, you know, getting, you know, top guys, wrestling top guys for free on free TV for 2 to 3 hours was a really big deal. I don't think Saturday night's main event is the most apt comparison, like on the WWF side. I think really, like, in a modern context, the thing that's most similar to Clash of Champions would be NXT TakeOver.
Yeah, for sure.
In the sense that they were built to, it's like five matches, you know, it's, you know, a lot of the early clashes were often five matches. So, yeah, having gone through a bunch of them here for the show, I'm pretty psyched to talk about this, man. There's a lot of good ones. Yeah. There was a lot of stinkers too, but
there was.
Yeah, but today we'll just focus on the good here.
Yes.
You know, I would echo everything Kyle says, but at least for when I started getting into Clash, it was also that it was like during the week, you know, during the school week. So that was like an extra special gift to be able to watch that, you know, after school.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I mean, it's hard. There's so much wrestling on TV these days. If you're a newer fan, it's kind of hard maybe for you to imagine what it was like back then. But I mean, like if you were a WCW fan, television wise, I mean, the signature show before Nitro was WCW Saturday Night, right? And that aired obviously on Saturday nights. You had shows in syndication like WCW Pro. They had, Worldwide Main Event, Power Hour. Those were like, some of those were on TBS. Power Hour was on TBS, wasn't it?
Yes.
And that was only on for like 5 years, I think. But I mean, they had like these shorter shows, but yeah, like I said, WCW Saturday Night was like the main show, and you got that once a week. So, you know, they'd have these Clash of the Champions shows, which were like network specials, as Kyle mentioned. A lot of times they serve to kind of build towards a pay-per-view, as we might mention when we go through some of these matches. But, I mean, they were definitely standalone shows like the TakeOvers, like Kyle said, that had kind of a special feel about them. They were kind of famous for not taking commercial breaks during matches. You know, like that's something fans have complained about for eons, professional wrestling fans. And Clash of the Champions was a little bit different in that you would oftentimes see the entire match without a commercial break. And I know I wasn't a huge WCW fan growing up. I'd say most of my memories of watching these actually live starts around Clash 28, which was in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which I begged a friend to go to who had tickets, and he didn't take me, so I didn't get to attend it. But I watched it that night, and that was in 94. So I think from like 94 through 97, I watched most of them live, and I always really, really looked forward to them because it was like a pay-per-view on free television. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of noteworthy matches, especially when you look at like Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, Sting. They had so many famous matches.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about the proliferation of TV today. That is precisely what kind of did in the Clash of Champions as a series, right? Once you had monthly pay-per-views and you had Nitro, the Clash of Champions was an obsolete concept. You didn't need it anymore. Especially, you know, I mean, some of those Nitros, I mean, were, you know, just like a Clash of Champions. It was kind of pointless. And, you know, going into 98 when they debuted Thunder, there was absolutely no need to do one of these things. So that ended it, you know. There were typically 4 to 5 a year from 88 to 94. And then they dropped that down to 2 in 95 to 97. I know Mike Graham likes to take, you know, I guess God rest his soul, in his hideous performance in that Rise and Fall WCW DVD, but it was not Mike Graham's idea.
So I was thinking about this, Kyle, because we kind of talked about a little bit about the WWF, WCW war as it relates to pay-per-view and being on the same night and everything when we did a show way back on episode 13 of Top Rope Nation.
Oh my God.
November of 2016. You remember doing that show? It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but we did a deep dive on the history of the Survivor Series. And we talked about 87 and 88. But when we talked about 87, we really talked about how, you know, WWE had strong-armed the cable companies with Starcade and ran head-to-head. And then that went into January of 88, where you had the Royal Rumble and the Bunkhouse Stampede on the same night. And so then you get to the night of WrestleMania 4, and WCW, or it would become WCW, still Jim Crockett Promotions at the time, they decided to give WWE a taste of their own medicine, and they ran Clash of the Champions 1 on March 27, 1988 from Greensboro, in one of their all-time best markets, head-to-head with the WWE's biggest event of the year. And that clash, Kyle, was pretty damn successful, was it not?
It was, and it put a dent in the Mania buy rate. At least that's what people, you know, have come to, you know, say. It was easily the superior show of the two that evening, and it was a little bit of vengeance for Crockett and what had, WWF had done to them over the last several months. But, of course, the good times would not last long, and by the end of 88, Crockett had to sell to Turner. The following year, they tried it again, and there was a lot of behind-the-scenes maneuvering with the cable companies why this happened. They tried to go against WrestleMania again with Clash 6, which, of course, has the famous Flair Steamboat match that we're going to talk about later. And that show did not put a dent at all in WrestleMania 5. WrestleMania 5 did a monster buy rate, the biggest pay-per-view number for 10 years until Austin Rock broke it at WrestleMania 15. And there were a lot of reasons for that. Mainly, George Scott is an idiot. Nothing like not promoting a big TV special with Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat on it. But that's maybe a different story for a different day.
Yeah, so the Clash 6, the Superdome, was not close to sold out. It wasn't even half full, if I recall correctly. There was not a lot of people there, but a legendary match. We're going to talk about it here in a little bit. But I think I really find the maneuverings with the pay-per-view business and what was going on with Crockett and Vince so, so interesting. So if you want more on that, really go back in our archives, way back. Like I said, episode 13, we really deep dive into what was going on at the end of 87 and early 88. And I mean, that pretty much led into the Clash of the Champions. And I guess to start talking about some of the best matches from these shows, I'm just going to kind of go off of what I wrote the other day. So on Saturday night, I published a feature over on comicbook.com looking at what I deemed the seven best WCW Clash of the Champions matches. And I mean, it's a lot of the usual suspects that you would expect. I mean, I started it off, I just put them in chronological order. I didn't rank them in, you know, which match I thought was the best. I just went chronologically. And first, I had to start with Sting and Flair from the first Clash. We talked about this one on our Ric Flair draft that we did a couple of months ago here on the program. I mean, it's just a legendary match. 45-minute time limit draw. Most see this is the match that really put Sting in the main event scene, really established him as a star. I know some people are critical of this one when you go back and watch it, but I mean, the historical significance of it is so high, and it being on that first Clash, I had to have it on my list. Kyle, I think you were kind of critical of this one on our Flair draft, but I mean, what's your takeaway in that one?
I wouldn't say critical. I don't think I'm as high on it. I know it won Match of the Year in the Observer for 88. I don't know if I agree with that. So, I mean, if that's being critical, then I guess I'm critical. Interesting note here. It's not just that it made Sting a star. It's that after the match was over, the consensus feeling within the company is that Sting was going to be the man to lead the promotion into the 90s. And that really didn't go as well as it hoped. You know? It was like kind of this golden goose they kept just waiting for. Like, oh, okay, you know, I know things, business is going down, but when Sting gets the title, oh, the sky will be blue forever. The sun will shine. I guess the sky is blue forever, so the sun will shine forever. But it didn't really go as planned, and it kind of torpedoed Lex Luger's babyface push in the process. Because he was, you know, at that very time, he had just done a horseman split, and He's the guy who main evented against Flair at the next pay-per-view, Great American Bash 88. I guess. But yeah, it made Sting, and fuck Sandy Scott for ruling it a draw.
Well said. Yeah.
You know, yeah. That's not talked about enough, is like how they had these judges at ringside, and they had like, it was a playmate ruled it for Flair. Gary Juster voted for Sting, and then Sandy Scott, the third judge, was like, well, I rule it a draw. That's some kind of cheap booking. And of course you had Eddie Haskell and Jason Hervey at ringside, yes, as well.
Oh man.
But yeah, a very big deal. I mean, this match did a month. You talk about the success of this show, Ryan, earlier on. This show did a monster number on TBS. This match in particular, especially in, you know, their home markets, the TV ratings were through the roof. So it was a big winner, no doubt about it. And I think of the seven matches you have listed, which I have read over, this is one of the four that everyone will have on their top seven.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it did a 5.6 rating on TBS, which is a very, very good cable rating in that era. Like you said, Kyle, though, I mean, this show, looking at it versus WrestleMania 4, which is not a great show. I mean, it has a great moment at the end with Savage hoisting the title and everything, but in-ring wise, it's not a great show. But when you look at Clash of the Champions, one, you got Flair and Sting, but you also have the Midnight Express and the Fantastics in a really good tag team match earlier on the card, which I had in my honorable mentions in the article. And also the Luger Wyndham versus Arn and Tully match. The semi-main is a good one, too.
Yeah, the pop that Lex Luger and Barry Windham get when they win the titles, spoiler alert, is among the most thunderous I've ever heard in the history of professional wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they couldn't have picked a better market to run the show in, right? Greensboro.
Oh, absolutely not. And then the Midnight Express Fantastics match you mentioned, that would absolutely be in my top seven. It might be my favorite match on the show. Just a tremendous brawl to start. I love Jim Ross losing his mind on commentary. I obviously do not love the hideous overdub of the Midnight Express music on the WWE Network. Whoever responsible for that should be beaten. You know, I mean, just imagine those teams not having a good match. I know there's a dusty finish, and if those of you who maybe want to check that match out for the first time, you like what you see, they have a tremendous rematch that airs on Worldwide a little over a month later, and it goes about 40 minutes with the Fantastics winning the belts in another match of the year candidate. It's on Daily Motion if you want to check that out.
Well, we know it's not on Monsoon Classic.
No, it isn't. I wasn't going to mention that, but because I think it was originally.
Yeah, I'm positive it was. Pour one out. Once again, we mentioned on the last show, Monsoon Classic. God, I hope that channel comes back.
But yeah, I mean, out of five matches on the first Clash, I'd have three at 4 stars or better. That's a phenomenal percentage.
Oh, yeah. Great, great show.
With two at 4.5, this and the Stinger Flair match.
Yeah.
If they were AEW, Dave would have gave him 5.
If it was in the Tokyo Dome, he would have gave him 6.
If he was ringside, he would have gave it 5, like he was at a lot of the big matches. And
why did they have Dave judging instead of Sandy Scott?
It's true. Fuck, well, they had some better judges in 89, which led to some memorable moments.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. So that would come out of the Flair Steamboat feud when Terry Funk got involved, not on a Clash show, but
no, that was at Wrestle War.
Yeah, but the match that that really set up the Wrestle War match was the one that took place, we mentioned it a few minutes ago, Clash 6 in March 89, went head to head with WrestleMania 5, and it was that 2 out of 3 falls match, just a legendary match with Rick Steamboat and Ric Flair in the Louisiana Superdome in one of our favorite cities, gentlemen, New Orleans, Louisiana. If we were older back then, maybe this would have been a time we would have all went to the show.
Tickets were still available.
Yeah, we could have got
Thanks,
in.
George That's Scott.
How many times when you were at Mania 34, Kyle, did that thought come through your mind? You're such a historian of the sport. I bet you sat there at one moment during the show and thought, you know, this is Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair went at it.
You know, I don't know if I did think about that during the time. Shame
too many
on me.
Beers?
Yeah, probably.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a great show. Has like a little bit of a a great match, I should say. Has a kind of a controversial finish where in the third fall, Steamboat wins, but Flair has his like foot under the bottom rope. It's like a double pin spot, and Steamboat gets his arm up at the last second. But I mean, this is a great match. You talk about the trilogy that Steamboat and Flair had in 89, and I know a lot of people pick this one as their favorite. I've always leaned towards the Wrestle War one, which I mentioned on the Flair draft. But I mean, it's hard to go wrong with Clash 6, Kyle.
Yeah, this one's pretty easily my least favorite of the trilogy, if only because that production on that Clash of the Champions show is really bad to go back and watch, just with the lighting of that arena, which, you know, I'm sure they had to do because of the attendance, but it's really bad. Lots of shadows. It's really dark. And then, like you said, with the funky finish, I'd prefer the other two.
Yeah. So it sets up the rematch at Wrestle War 89. The show did a 4.3 rating on TBS, so down from the, what did I say, 5.8 for Clash 1 a year earlier. So, yeah, I mean, definitely a large decrease.
I'm going to tell you something right now. I respect the hell out of Justin Joint for what he just said. Because I don't know if anyone else has ever said that, and I kind of feel the same way, too. Of the three, it might be my least favorite. Now, those who follow along the show know that I kind of think it's generally unnecessary for a professional wrestling match to go 50-something minutes. This is the best one that ever did. I'll say that. The fact that, you know, it's not everyone's favorite of the Holy Trinity just speaks to how strong those three matches are. I think that's the lesson learned here. Let's be positive for a minute. And don't forget about Landover, Maryland, by the way, the house show that we've got on YouTube.com. That's about as good a house show match as I've ever seen. But, yeah, I mean, this was... in terms of Broadway's as good as it gets, really, at least on U.S. soil. And it does set up the Wrestle War match quite nicely. And, you know, all three matches are so different, which is so refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Chi-Town Rumble is more of the sprint.
Yeah.
With Steamboat winning the title, this is, you know, they go 50+. And then Wrestle War kind of feels like, you know, a greatest hits collage of the first two, but then it has, of course, the tremendous angle featuring Terry Funk post-match. So, yeah, something for everybody. I'm not going to, no matter what you think, no matter what your own personal favorite of the three is, I'm not going to fault you. But I like how Justin Joint admitted that this one might be his least favorite of the three, because it might be mine as well.
I'm not ashamed to admit, I love a greatest hits album.
Yeah. Hey, man, like I said, Wrestle War is my favorite, so... I misspoke. Clash 1 did a 5.6, not a 5.8, and this one was down to a 4.3. The Clash before this did a 4.6, so they were kind of steadily going down, but of course, going head-to-head with WrestleMania 5, took a bite out of this one and took a bite out of the live gate, because the estimated attendance was just 5,300 fans in the Superdome.
Wow. There's a lot more people that were at Saints games around that time. And Saints were getting good around that time period, actually. I mentioned when we talked Flair Sting, Ryan, that on your list of seven, four of them were like the no-brainers that everyone's going to have. This, clearly another of those four, is probably the one most will consider the best Clash match ever.
Yeah.
I know it's number one on my list.
Mm-hmm. So... should we go to Clash 7? And this is the one that's going to feature Ricky Steamboat and Terry Funk in June 1989. I had this one on my list. Kind of a unique show because it's in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. So, of course, a large military base there. You know, you think about WWE doing the tribute to the troop shows these days. And basically, I guess, since, what, 2002 or so. This was kind of like that. And... They have a really good match. I mean, you look at Steamboat and you look at Terry Funk. I think so many of today's fans would be just shocked if they went back and they watched this era of Terry Funk, because I think a lot of the younger people, you know, like they know him from the very, very tail end of his career. When you see Terry Funk in the 1980s, man, holy shit, was this guy awesome. So I think I wrote in my article that this one kind of gets lost sometimes because it happens, you know, between Steamboat and Flair and Funk and Flair at Clash 9 in November later that year. But I think this one is worth going out of your way to watch. It's a great match. Two of the greatest performers in wrestling history.
Yeah, it may not be one of those four obvious ones I keep referencing, But yeah. This would be in my top seven for sure, too. It's also, I believe, the only match in history where they used the WCW top 10 as an angle behind the match, you know, because they had, like, Steamboat was the number one contender, and Funk wanted to be the number one contender. And then, of course, the whole thing is a backdrop for Lex Luger to turn heel, an awesome freaking heel turn to end the show, because he's mad that Steamboat is still ranked number one when he's the U.S. champion. This is one of my favorite clashes. As you mentioned, Ryan, it took place on the Army base, and this crowd is freaking rabid. I mean, Ranger Ross versus the Terrorist, which opens the show. I mean, these people react to that like it was Hogan Andre, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And this is the only time, you mentioned, obviously, these are Flair's two famous rivals from 89. It's the only time they met that year.
Yeah.
Steamboat and Funk. So Steamboat's selling is magnificent throughout this match. Just absolutely magnificent. And like Luger's heel turn at the end, when he comes out, that they foreshadowed a little bit, which was great. You know, Lex was supposed to be out there at commentary and he didn't come out. Then he shows up at the end, clotheslines. Steamboat hits him with a chair and yells, "There lies your number one contender," and kicks off Lex's best run ever.
Oh, yeah, easily. Go ahead, Justin.
I was just going to say, anybody listening out there, if they haven't seen this Steamboat Funk match, I'd say maybe a handful of times Ryan Drosty has ever cursed on this podcast. So that lets you know how good it is.
There you go. Yeah, I've been letting him out a little more recently, but I try not to. Early on when we started doing this show, I would bleep the curse words, and I finally got sick of it because you guys, mostly Kyle, would be swearing. And I just got sick of throwing in the bleeps and editing, so I was like, yeah, you know, whatever. I'll put the parental guidance explicit content on these pods and be done with it. So
yeah, I just love this crowd, man. At Clash 7, just a bunch of shirtless army guys in the crowd, and they're constantly
small venue. Like, I mean, it gives it a nice feel too.
Yeah, and I also, of course, the highlight of Clash 7 is when, because they had like Coors Light turnbuckle or ring post pads at this time, the NWA did, like Jim Ross like makes this random mention of how he'd love to be drinking a Coors Light right now, and Bob Caudle's like response sounds like he like came in his pants.
Speaking of bleeps, here we go.
Whoops. I mean, like Jim Ross, like, I'd love to be drinking a Coors Light right about now. And Bob comes like, oh, yeah. I don't know what match it is, but that exchange absolutely happens on the show. Oh. And it must be heard by everybody.
I would love to throw in that clip, but I'm probably not going to search through that whole show to find it. Okay. So you guys can go back and watch Clash 7.
Yeah. I think JR talked about this on his podcast, as a matter of fact, and just how hot it was in that building.
Yeah.
At the time, like, it was over 100 degrees. They had to take their sports coats off, and they were sweating their you-know-whats off, so.
Hey, you can say it.
Ass.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, my list continued with, I mentioned it a second ago, Funk and Flair, the I Quit match in New York in November of 89. Now, the show was not in New York City, by the way. This was in, like, Troy, New York, which is a good drive from New York City. But
David Dixon spanned country, I believe.
Yeah, they call it. Promoted it like it was in the New York City area, but a little ways from there.
There was a lot of references to, I know they're watching us today in Stamford.
Yeah, so, you know, speaking of the star rating scale, this one got 5 stars, if I'm not mistaken, for Mr. Dave Meltzer, the I Quit match. And I love the feel of this match right from the get-go. I mean, geez, Terry Funk coming out just right out of the good, the bad, and the ugly with the cowboy music. And he strolls to the ring. The lighting effects are awesome. Flair, always great, of course, coming out to 2001. And then, man, these guys go to war. Terry Funk, obviously, like, one of the great brawlers in the history of wrestling. Man, I love this. And like I said, it was set up by the Wrestle War match when Funk was a judge and gave a pile driver to Ric Flair through a table after the match that Flair had with Steamboat, which you didn't get that much back in that era, like, ever. So this match had a ton of heat going into it. And I mean, it's one of the absolute best matches, maybe the best match in the career of Terry Funk. So this one draws a 4.9 cable TV rating, which was a pretty large increase from where the Clash had been for the previous several editions. So fans were pumped about it, as you can tell from the TBS rating that was drawn. Let's see, I even had it in my article. This was the highest Clash television rating since Clash 3. So,
And this is one of the better Clashes overall, too, top to bottom. There's some fun stuff on there with Luger and Pillman and the Midnight Express do a heel turn that gets a huge babyface pop at the expense of the Dynamic Dudes. Most years, this match, Ric Flair versus Terry Funk, I Quit, Clash 9, is the match of the year. But it's 1989 Ric Flair, and it's not. You know, it's the blow-off to Flair's second great feud of 89. This, by the way, is a better feud than Flair Steamboat, for sure. Like, especially watching through 2020 eyes. Mm. You know, like, the whole family man gimmick of Steamboat, that doesn't age well.
No.
I mean, I know we're all proud papas, but come on, man.
No, I mean,
family man.
Yeah, the funk stuff was just another level, man. I mean, the heat with the pile driver and all.
Yeah, and they had a really good match. Like, it's a match of the year candidate at Great American Bash before this, of course. Mm-hmm. And then they went next level here. This match is up there with the Flair Steamboat trilogy, I would say. Just a vicious match for free television, especially in 1989. You get JR and Gordon Solie together on commentary, which you'd get very often. So, yeah, just an absolutely tremendous match. And Funk kind of calls it quits after, you know, literally in the match, and then he doesn't wrestle anymore after this.
Ever. He was done.
For a while. Yeah, never wrestled again. Terry Funk stuck to his guns. Stuck to his guns.
Yeah.
And in 1989, Terry Funk's career ended, and he rode off into the sunset.
You know, the next one I had on my list was one that I'm pretty sure we talked about this one on the tag team specialist show that we did last July. I think it was like our 4th of July show last summer in 2019. I know Justin loves this match. You can hear him from across town.
Justin doing his Bob Caudle impression.
I can hear him from across town, and I can almost feel him from across town as we get ready to talk about this one. Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko, the enforcers, taking on Dustin Rhodes and the secret opponent, which, guys, I just love how they build this up. The guy walks out, Steamboat walks out, and he's in this disguise, which is a freaking dragon. And they're like, who could it be?
Yeah.
I don't know who this could be.
Well, and of course, you can always count on Tony Schiavone to not know these things, right? He's like, my first guess is it's got to be someone from Japan.
Yes, yes. Come on, man.
Love how Tony never knows.
But, hey, it's a title change. So we get Dustin and Ricky winning the WCW tag team straps here. Huge pop, though, when Steamboat unveils himself to be Dustin's partner. Of course, Steamboat was replacing Barry Windham in the match. I mean, Justin, do you have anything to share on this one? Because I know you like it so much.
I mean, this show was one of my favorite shows of all time. And actually, you know, the one before it might be arguably the worst Clash of the Champions ever. But this one, you know, this match was amazing. One of my favorite tag team matches of all time. Like you kind of pointed out, this was a really hot crowd too, but you know this show also included the big, you know, one of my favorite moments that I'm sure we've talked about numerous times on this show, the big Sting getting taken to the hospital and coming back and losing the U.S. title to Rick Rude, which a young little Stinger and Justin Joint was very upset about. But there's one other thing I really wanted to kind of point out about this show.
He was taken to a medical facility, by the way, not a hospital. They were very clear about that the entire show.
My bad.
A medical facility, yes. I believe this is the show that begat that wrestling term, how we will never say hospital. It is always a medical facility.
But yeah, one other thing about the show that I want to point it out, only because of its connection to one of the few things I'm really digging about wrestling right now. The main event for this show, Lex Luger, a recently heel world champion, going up against a tag team specialist in Rick Steiner, a la Roman Reigns and Jey Uso.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. This is one of the best clashes ever. I think you could make a pretty strong case it's the second best clash behind the first one. And as Justin alluded to, it is a remarkable turnaround from the previous several months of WCW, which was absolute the dirt worst. I mean, that summer.
Just say it.
What?
You can say it.
I'm saving some. I got some bombs left later for you. Don't worry. You don't need to push those buttons. You don't need to push the curse word button there, Kevin Dunn. I'd say from June through September of 91, WCW is just straight up cow dung. I mean, it is horrible. Flair leaves the promotion. They're just directionless. That Clash 16 that Justin referenced is really bad. It's one of the worst clashes ever. And this show just leads this huge renaissance right into that Dangerous Alliance period. And it's just great. I mean, Justin, is the greatest moment in wrestling history right after Steamboat reveals himself here and Larry and Arn start frantically calling timeout? Yeah. they start gesturing wildly at the crowd, like, you know, like their basketball coach, like, timeout, timeout. And then Arn starts yelling, he's just a man. He's just a man. And, that's Ricky Steamboat straight off his WWF run as the Dragon.
Oh.
And, you know, which he didn't like. But yet he ironically comes out, as you so astutely pointed out, Ryan, in a dragon costume here.
Who could imagine? Who is that? Yeah. Who could that possibly
be? There was some deal with, like, you know, there was some legal maneuvering behind the scenes, I know, between WCW and WWF, because I don't know if they were clear if they could get him. I can't remember. Our good buddy Liam O'Rourke sent me this thing because he was just reviewing something randomly, and he said something like how WWF had asked if Steamboat was free and clear to be used, and WWF didn't get the letter till it's too late, and WCW got the letter like the day after the clash or something like that. So anyway, it all worked out. They used him. He's back and had a great run from 91 to 94. And I know we're going to be talking about him again in a little bit later.
So what you're saying is Ricky Steamboat might've been checking the job boards, so to speak. That's my transition for this next segment. Cause we got to go to a word from our sponsors. And that is our friends over at BetOnline and, yes, Indeed.com. Even though sports had a break, your business did not. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire, and 73% of online job seekers visit Indeed each month. Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. So right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th. The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season-opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses, and don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So, guys, the next one I had on my list, I went forward to November of 92 in Clash 21. Now, this was a rematch. About a year earlier, these two guys had wrestled. It was a very brief match at Clash 17. But in November 92 at Clash 21, Sting and Rick Rude in the semifinals of the King of Cable tournament. I mean, what a title, the King of Cable. There we go. I wrote about this in the article, and we've talked about this on the show before, I think. And I think, Justin, you're kind of high on this opinion as well. But a lot of people think that Rick Rude in this run, following his exit from the WWE, that his run in WCW here in 92 was better than his WWE run. Now, what do you think about that, Justin?
Absolutely. The thing I wonder is, like, you almost want to say it's like it proved what maybe WWF missed out on, but he wouldn't have been able to have the kinds of matches in WWF that he was able to have in WCW in this time frame.
Yeah.
And to his credit, it evolved as a worker, and he obviously did have a better set of opponents where WWF, the focus was the gimmick more so. I mean, he still did the shtick beforehand here in WCW, but it was far less shticky than he was in WWF.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, go ahead. No, I didn't mean. Justin referenced the match they had, and you did as well just there, Ryan, at Clash 17. Despite its brevity, I actually kind of like that one better than this. Just because of the angle behind it and just, Sting making his way back from the medical facility and going in the wrong door at first.
Yeah,
going through the wrong door at first and it's locked. And then he like comes in, beating the 10 count before he has to forfeit. And, Rude winning the U.S. title was a big deal. I don't know. This is the one of your seven that I wasn't nearly as high on. They sort of telegraphed it being a 20-minute draw. Sting and Vader in the King of Cable finals at Starrcade is absolutely tremendous. This was, I think, good but not great.
Real quick, I got to get this dig in. Going back to what you were just saying about Sting coming back from the medical facility at 17, another thing that really, to me, added to that moment when he finally came out to that live crowd was him coming out to his best theme music.
Dun, oh, here dun, we go. Dun. I thought of that conversation when I rewatched this one the other night, Justin, when we were debating Sting in that.
It wouldn't have been the same if all of a sudden a man called Sting came on the microphone. Boom.
You know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. I don't think that theme ever sounded better than when Sting ran to the ring for that rude match in Clash 17. And Jim Ross starts yelling, "I've never seen anything more courageous in my life."
It's literally one of my favorite moments in wrestling history.
I will say that is an awesome moment. I still prefer Man Called Sting. I'll die on that hill. But I don't know if you would remember this. We talked about this several months ago when we were talking about Sting's theme song. And I did have to give Justin the win by way of my wife, though. I don't think I ever told that on the show, but after we had that discussion on the podcast, like the next day, I asked my wife, "All right, so which of these theme songs do you think's better?" And I played the original Sting, and then I played Man Called Sting, and she went with Justin's opinion. So I gave him the W, but I still prefer Man Called Sting.
Called Sting,
I just love the guitar solo at the beginning of that one, but they are both solid theme songs. And to your point, Justin, yeah, that is a pretty cool moment.
Thanks.
I'm about to add that quote right there to our show open. That was great. All right. So let's see. The next one I had, I guess, on the list was Austin Steamboat. I mentioned this at the show open. Clash 28, August 94 in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I was in fifth grade, I believe, at the time, and I will never forget. I mean, it was like one of the first weeks of school, and my friend Jeremy had an extra ticket, and I remember it like every recess that day, kind of begging him to take me. He didn't take me. He took another kid, and he was there. I was not, but man, this is a great match. Steamboat and Steve Austin were fantastic opponents. This, when you look at some of Steve Austin's best singles matches in WCW before he left and, you know, got the pink slip from Eric Bischoff, you got to look at his Ricky Steamboat matches. And this one is significant because it was actually Steamboat's last television match until he did that kind of brief comeback. Or what was it, like 2009 in WWE? Yeah,
against Jericho.
Yeah, this was his last TV match. He wrestled some house shows right after this. But this was like the swan song for the Dragon. And I have always enjoyed this one. I know it's on one of the DVDs of Steve Austin's career. He included on that, so he thinks very highly of it. Obviously, you can check it out on the network now. So I think it's worth a watch. What do you guys think of this one?
You know, the injury occurs as he skins the cat right before the finish. For those, you know, keeping score at home. So I would not have this in my top seven. It would probably be like right outside my top 10, I would say. I just watched it a couple hours ago because I was like, you know, something irked, there was something that like irked me about this match and I can't remember what, so I'm going to put it on. And it immediately came to me. So they ran this match right after the big injury angle with Hogan. They did where they ripped off the
yes.
Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan bit. Mm-hmm. You know, the masked guy come out and kneecapped him, you know, putting the match with Flair in doubt. And that kind of overshadowed this match. That's on the promotion. A U.S. title change should not have been put in this spot right after a big angle like that. But these two did deliver. And they, to your point, Ryan, they usually delivered. They actually had a very good match at a previous clash 2 years earlier for the TV title. I think it was Clash 20, if I do remember correctly. And I like their Bash at the Beach match, too, which set this up because, like, it's really fun towards the end. Austin's trying to get intentionally disqualified by chucking Steamboat over the rope because WCW still had the over-the-top rule at this point. And Steamboat keeps skinning the cat so he won't get disqualified and the match continues. That's, I think, some real cool stuff. But, yeah, I knew there was something that, like, kind of took me out of the match a little bit, and it was just, you know, the split screen with Hogan in the ambulance. I didn't think that was very fair to these guys who are having a big U.S. title match that, you know, obviously you want to put the Hogan angle over, but you just shouldn't have run the U.S. title match right after it.
I believe they take Hogan off to St. Luke's Hospital in downtown Cedar Rapids, yes. Which is like right next to the interstate. And every time I drive past that, I always think of the show.
That's incredible.
Every single time. Now,
did your guys' blood get boiling? Because Bobby Heenan had several jokes at Iowa's expense. Do they even have a hospital in the state? You guys, that has to get your blood boiling.
Oh,
that
kind of man. Chatter. I laugh. That's funny. Okay. I love Bobby Heenan.
I think he has to, it's not a veterinary hospital, is it?
Yeah. No, I mean, but I have been to many, many wrestling events at this arena, but not this one, and it still bugs me I wasn't at this show.
It's a good clash between this and, you know, yeah, they ripped off Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan in an attempt to be topical, but I like that angle, actually, and, you know, it's kind of a similar deal to Sting and Rude at Clash 17, where can Hogan come back? Of course he does, and of course, if you think Hulk loses like Sting does, my God, have you not been paying attention to the history of professional wrestling, because no, he doesn't. Although he does take a count-out loss, if I remember correctly, doesn't he?
Yeah, Flair wins in the main event.
Flair wins because it sets up their Halloween Havoc career versus career match.
Yeah.
Remember how they shamelessly tried to tease that the mystery guy was Mr. Perfect?
I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah, didn't they say things like, oh, it's the perfect surprise or something? Because, like, Perfect had, like, a contract squabble at this time with WWF.
Okay,
You know, he had just walked out and not done the Luger program after WrestleMania, so... Mm.
Yeah, you get Antonio Inoki on this show against Stephen William
Regal. Yeah, that was a real clash of styles instead of clash of champions, I think.
Yeah, no, it's a good show, Clash 28, August 24th, 94, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Check it out. But
there was a clash in Cleveland, by the way.
Did you go?
No, it was Clash 5. I was too young. Although, I guess it was 89. I had been to a WWF show before, but I was not watching the NWA at that time, and something tells me I would have been looking for the pisser during a 20-minute Butch Reed Stephen Casey match. It's not one of the better clashes.
Yeah. Hey, Kyle, what was your preferred Paul Roma team? Pride and Glory or Pretty Wonderful?
Power and Glory, you mean?
Power and Glory, yeah.
Power and Glory for sure, although I do not hate Pretty Wonderful at all. I think it was much better than Roma and the Horsemen.
Wow, wasn't expecting that answer.
Yeah, Roma and Orndorff was a much better team than Roma and Anderson, believe it or not. And Arn Anderson's one of the greatest tag team wrestlers of all time.
Well, Arn Anderson was on many of my just missed the list matches. I mean, I guess I can breeze through these. And then I know, Kyle, you got some matches to talk about here as we round it all out. But I said at the end of my article, in fairness, here are some of the other matches that I considered for the list. It was really, really hard. And I think I told you guys on a text, maybe Austin Steamboat is not top seven if I'm just going by match quality, but I was trying to have a good spread of different eras on the list, you know, for the website. But
yeah, those editors can be real tough, aren't they? They're a real
I couldn't have everything from like 89, you know. Yeah. So but yeah, I mean,
that makes sense.
Midnight Express and the Fantastics, I mentioned earlier, Clash One. I mean, just straight up match quality, that probably would have made my list too. But I had it in my honorable mentions. I had Midnight and Flair and Windham from Clash Four. Flair and Sting against Slater and Muda from Clash 8, which I think came up on our Flair draft, I'm pretty sure. Luger and Pillman, Clash 9. Luger and Flair, Clash 12. I had Dustin and Barry against Arn and Bobby Eaton from Clash 19. Barry and Dustin against Steamboat and Shane Douglas from Clash 21. The Hollywood Blondes, that's Austin and Pillman against Flair and Arn Anderson from Clash 23. Flair and Sting at Clash 27. And then one from the second-to-last edition of the Clash of the Champions, Ultimo Dragon and Dean Malenko, Clash 34. And so altogether, I mean, those with the other seven, I mean, that if you haven't seen these matches, guys, there's your watch list. Get at it.
Yeah, that Dragon-Malenko match is very much the peak, I think, of the Cruiserweight division. I'm not saying this match specifically was the peak of the division, but that time period, the previous three pay-per-views, you had various combinations of Malenko, Ray, and Dragon opening up the pay-per-views match of the year contenders every time. So, they actually even referenced Dragon losing the 8 titles to Jushin Liger at the big Tokyo Dome show, which was, you know, early January, not yet named Wrestle Kingdom. That's what we know it now. But, you know, even going back there was always that big early year New Japan show. And God bless him for referencing it. Thank you, Mike Tanay, because I don't know what Dusty Rhodes and Bobby were talking about during that match. That would be my lone representative, and I think it was yours, if I heard correctly, from the Nitro era clashes.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. By the way, Ric Flair, great tag team wrestler. You had three tags. Who knew? I agree with you on all three of them. The one from 4, the one from 8, and the one from 23. Yeah, those are all good ones. The other three I'd like to add, and these would be contenders for my top 7. One of these would round out the top 7. Steiners against Doc and Gordy from Clash 19. Much better than their very boring draw that they did at Beach Blast. Barry Windham and Two Cold Scorpio from Clash 23. I love this freaking match, man. It's worked so smartly in a way that, like, so much modern wrestling isn't. You have Barry, the big favorite, wrestles the match like a big favorite. It all builds to this tremendous babyface comeback from Too Cold. By the way, please, at some point during the show, Ryan, if I can make the rare production request,
okay,
two songs need to be played. The actual Midnight Express theme song, and then Too Cold Scorpio's theme song. The Too Cold! We got to get that in, man. That'll get
not Flash Funk. And
no, we're not. That is never going to be spoken of again.
I'm just trying to make you swear at this point. Yeah.
Flash Funk.
Come on. That is a freaking awesome match, though. I can't believe I forgot to put that one on my list, to be honest.
I really like that one too. But by the way, during this match, I thought of you, Ryan, because Jesse Ventura takes a little pot shot at Michael Jordan during the match, when he asks, who's MJ betting on tonight when Tony runs down the card?
Jesse Ventura, what an
absolute beauty.
June 93. I mean, that's like during or just after the 93 finals. Wow.
Yeah.
That was who's a big MJ story in NBA at the time.
Yeah. And then I think the match match that I would put at number 7 on my list is, I think this was the original deep dive, correct me if I'm wrong, Justin Joint, Dustin Rhodes and Vader from Clash 29, a little 94 action for you.
Yeah, definitely is, because that's the only reason I watched this match, because of your recommendation.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan's hideous takeover of the promotion was well underway at this point, but these two simply just did not get the memo, because they worked a very old-school WCW-ish match, Vader yelling, "This ain't no tea party, boy," and Dustin Rhodes with just unbelievable babyface fire in this match. I mean, just taking Vader down to a massive pop. There's this great spot where he goes for the bulldog and Vader just chucks him out of the ring. Just real good stuff.
I remember when you recommended this on the show, and I know I watched this match live, but I didn't really remember it. I remember just being blown away watching it, and we were all texting like after we had recorded that show where you did the deep dive. Just all of us were marking out about this match. That's a great one. Yeah, Vader Dustin, Clash 29.
Probably between November 94 and September 95, the best WCW match. I think there's not a lot of competition. That's I'm trying to like have, because you know Pillman and Johnny B. Badd at Fall Brawl have a really good match that I would put on the same level, similar star rating as his Vader Dustin Rhodes match. But it was real slim pickings for that next 10 months or so.
Was that match brought up because we had previously wondered what Dustin Rhodes' best singles match was?
Maybe that's why we talked about it. I can't remember.
Could be. You can't remember either. Yeah, I mean, you could be right. I'm trying to think. Late 94 and early 95. I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, I mean, the first 8 months of 1995 WCW are, I just don't know what to say. I mean, it's shitty as Jason Whitlock.
Yes.
Which and is really shitty.
Pretty shitty. That's pretty shitty. Yes, yes, it is. Oh, man. All right. Well, I mean, I hope for the listeners, this is
just remember, kids, if you want to be on TV, have a little bit of discipline at the buffet table. Come on now.
Ooh, yikes. Oh, with that said, oh man. Well, I mean, like I was saying before, before that one,
keep it together. You're a broadcast professional, oh, Mr. Drosty.
Man. Whew. All right. If I really hope, though, you know, I know there's some people that listen to this show that weren't exactly watching wrestling in the late 80s and early to mid 90s. So hopefully this has given you something to do over the weekend as you get ready for WWE Clash of Champions. Go back, relive some of these matches. I mean, there's a lot of really good ones. We just talked about a couple dozen of them, probably. But, I mean, you can't go wrong with any of them that were mentioned on this program, I think.
Johnny B. Badd versus the Honky Tonk Man. Come on, go back. Watch him.
Oh, we know how much you love the Honky Tonk Man.
Oh, I love Honky Tonk Man.
All right.
Continental champion.
Yes, yes.
He's a great one.
So, guys, hey, it was
his
fun.
WCW run absolutely smelled, though. Oh, I mean, real bad. Oh, yeah. I mean, real bad.
Yeah. I remember him that clash in Iowa, 28. There was commercials that he was on for that show, and I was cringing every time.
It was right after the Dustin Vader match, they debuted his new music video.
Mm.
And it was not good.
It was bad. It was quite bad.
What's the best WWE Clash of Champions match, real quick? Can you name one off the top of your head?
You know, it's funny you mention that, because when I pitched the idea for this article, I believe a couple weeks ago, they wanted me to do a combined WCW Clash of Champions and WWE or WCW Clash of the Champions and WWE Clash of Champions. And I was like, I'm going to be honest with you guys, I don't think any WWE match would make that list. So my project this weekend is to do a best WWE Clash of Champions.
Good luck, because if you were to have read these cards to me and said this happened, I'd be like, okay, I guess, if you say so. I have no recollection of any of these matches.
It was Night of Champions first, right? And then they changed the name to Clash of Champions.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. So at the 2016 one, I know this will get Ryan's dander up, we had the TJ Perkins, Brian Kendrick cruiserweight title match. Mm. Remember that? That was one of our first shows. Remember how, like, you were just absolutely irate at that being the first cruiserweight title program?
I think I was proven correct because I did not like TJP even then. And man, that guy's turned into a massive tool ever since. So
that's one way to put it. Yes, I would agree. Imagine that. Imagine a grown ass man dabbing turning out to be a tool. Oh,
that's what I think that's what I was raging on, wasn't it? How dumb the dabbing was. Oh, yes. You have to go way back in the archives to listen to that one. But yeah, I'm trying to remember. I'm looking at the old cards. Brian and Orton, Night of Champions 13.
That's not a good match. It's all right for Brian, but like, I don't think I'm looking through
Punk and Hardy 09 Night of Champions.
Okay.
I don't even really remember that match, though.
I mean, the SummerSlam like match is good.
Yeah. Yeah, the SummerSlam match is really good. Man, I'm just scrolling through the cards right now. And Punk and Cena in 2012 probably was decent. I just don't remember. Like, they don't stand out like these other ones that we talked about at all. So I got some research the next couple days to put that list together.
I'm interested to see that list.
Yeah, I will send it to
you. Can you come up with 7?
Mm. I'm sure I will, but they're not going to compare to this list. I'll tell you that much. But yeah, no, these are much, much better matches from one of the best eras in pro wrestling. Specifically, 1989 was so good in WCW. So check out those 1989 matches, guys, if you haven't seen them. You can tweet the show at Top Rope Nation. You can email us. We'll be doing another mailbag segment very soon. If you send in a question that we read on the air, that's another way to get a free Top Rope Nation sticker in the mail. I've sent out dozens of them at this point. So I'd love to send some more, though. I bought like 100 of those stickers. So I got free stuff, guys. Send out a question for us to talk about on the show. TopRopeNation@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Ryan Droste. That's Droste. Kyle, where can the listeners find you?
At TRP Kyle.
And Justin, where can they find you?
At Justin Joint.
When he logs in every couple of weeks.
Yeah. Too busy eating Taco John's.
Oh, that's a great way to end these shows. Just like the last one, right? Kyle's going to get Taco John's pretty soon.
Hey, listeners. Get a hold of us. Let us know how many of you could actually take down an entire 6-pack in a pound.
I know one guy who can.
And I ain't sharing.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, you were talking about Jason Whitlock. I'm sorry.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Speaking of disgusting, besides Jason Whitlock, how about Triple H's win over CM Punk at Night of Champions 2011?
That was bad. Ooh, that was bad.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one where Kevin Nash ran in, right?
He was around at that time. I mean, Nash, he had cost Punk the title at SummerSlam. Wait, I think, wasn't Punk supposed to work Kevin Nash the show and Kevin Nash had like some medical issue?
Yeah, and so I remember like Triple H had to step in. Promos, yeah.
Was this the one?
That sounds right.
Yeah, and then, this isn't CM Punk talking to Triple H. This is Phil Brooks talking to Paul Levesque.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, guys. We're going to hit the road. I'm going to get some Taco John's tomorrow and send a picture to Kyle. So with that said, probably eat it while I'm mixing this show. With that said, this has been episode 175 of Top Rope Nation. We'll get all three of us back together again real soon. We'll see you on those podcast feeds on Monday morning. Have a good weekend.
Peace.